Welcome to the Adonis Index podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me is Peter Dickison. And Peter was shadowing the contest. And that's correct, right? You kind of did your own transformation Alongside the contest, but you didn't enter the contest. And lucky for everyone that you didn't, because your pictures, I think you would have probably, you would have won, or at least been in the top two for sure with the transformation you had. So congrats on that. And obviously anyone who's been in the forum has seen your picks. And, you've earned yourself onto the cover of a book with this transformation for sure. And anyone who's listening on iTunes, go over to adonisindex.com and check out the picks on the blog. And so let's just get going. Let's just talk about how you got involved with us, and then we'll sort of just roll from there.
Right. I discovered you guys through an interview I heard with Brad Howard. It was on another fitness website, and it was something about building a girl attracting body. It was something that came with this thing that I was reading, and I had a look at it. I had listened to it, and he just started talking about proportions and this thing called the Adonis Index. And then the interviewer recommended to check out the website, and so I checked out the website subscribed to the introductory booklet. Mm-hmm. That just basically explains about your own transformation, and it talked all about the Adonis Index. And then as soon as you started talking about Greek statues and art and the golden ratio, and I was pretty much hooked. I'm quite into that sort of thing, and into art and proportion, and the fact that there was suddenly this metric that gave me an endpoint and a goal, instead of sort of running around like a hamster in a wheel.
At that time, had you been working out or no, or were you like?
Yes, yeah, I'd sort of put on a lot of weight over a few years, and I'd been going to the gym probably 4 to 5 days a week for maybe a year and a half, and I was just still fat. I just couldn't drop the weight. I got extremely fit. At one stage I did 3 6-week sort of boot camp style CrossFit training courses in a row. And I was getting really fit with running, and doing probably 30 to 40 k's a week with running, and I just couldn't lose.
Was that not adding up for you? Like, you were getting strong, you were getting fit, you had endurance, but it wasn't translating. Like, were you kind of sort of hoping that when you got that quote fit, it would show? Like, show visually on your body?
Exactly. Yeah, I expected that the fitter I got, the thinner I'd get. That this weight I'd put on over the last few years would just sort of disappear.
Like the condition you arrived in your after photos, is that kind of what you thought you'd look like before when you were getting, quote, so fit?
No, actually, I never expected to look anything like I look like now.
Oh, really? You actually didn't think it was possible, or it just wasn't something you'd set up as something you could achieve or wanted to achieve?
I just never thought I could achieve it. Like, I just didn't think that my body looked like that, or could look like that. I'd been really fit in the past, and lean but never quite had a full six pack or, been as muscular or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And all this training I was doing, I was getting bigger and sort of, I was filling a shirt out and wearing extra large t-shirts and that sort of thing. And I was being fitter than any of the sort of trainers at the gym and instructors as far as my endurance and how much I could run and how many chin-ups I could do and how many push-ups I could do and that type of thing. But I was very thick around the middle and fat, and my weight just seemed to stay at around the sort of 95, 96 kilograms, and wasn't going down, and I was just felt like I'd hit a wall and it was beating my head against it.
So were you now, okay, so at that point, were you, did you start piecing together in your mind? Did you ever clue in that fitness doesn't relate to a look, so to speak? Like, you can be fit but overweight, and it just doesn't, one doesn't equal the other.
Yeah, exactly. I started realizing that. I probably should have had a clue about it because years ago I'd known a guy who was a little bit thick around the middle, but he could run like he was an unbelievable runner, incredible endurance, and just leave me for dead. And I was much leaner than he was at that stage. And that should have clued me in, but I just didn't realize I guess because in the past, when I'd been really physically fit, I had also been lean. Mm-hmm. But then I look back and I think, well, I was doing an insane amount of training, back when I was fit and lean, to the point where I guess I had, out-trained the amount of calories I was eating in those days. I just didn't know what a calorie was, to be honest.
Right. And you probably weren't focused on it either.
No. I mean, I'd go to the gym and then I'd be pretty hungry after running 10Ks, and then I'd
freestyle it with the diet.
And just eat till I felt full, basically.
All right. Okay, so you're kind of not sure. You're getting to the point where you realize there's a disconnect between being fit and the look of your body. So you arrive at us, and then some people have had like a time frame where they need to like consume some podcasts or something before they, you know, at first what we say sounds a little wonky, but then they, you know, they don't want to believe it, or like, what was there like a time frame, or did it just all happen all at once? You're like, yeah, I'm gonna do this.
Nope. As soon as I'd finished reading the stuff, I just threw away everything that I thought I knew about fitness and just dived straight into it completely, 100%. There was no question. I've got a very scientific mind, and the science and the logic and everything just made sense. The idea of the proportions and the goal, while I was reading the material, I had this complete mind shift, in my reasons for going to the gym. Like you say, in the Adonis stuff, it's, why do you go to the gym? Most people go to the gym because they want to look good, and that's it. And you get benefits from that. A good-looking body is a healthy body, and that sort of thing. And I was thinking, well, why am I actually going to the gym? Why am I doing this sort of CrossFit stuff and crazy boot camps and just running and running harder, and grinding out cardio hour after hour, 5 days a week at the gym? Why am I doing it? And I realized, well, I'm doing it because I just want to look good. In the past, I was doing it because, with my training history, through the military, it was very functional and it was required by the job. And then I sort of left the army and I kept training like I was still in the army. And I'm thinking, well, I don't need to be able to carry a pack 30 kilometers or, jump out of airplanes or whatever. So why do I go to the, why do I want to be fit now? And I just realized, well, yeah, I just want to be lean and look good. And,
was that actually hard to admit, or was it freeing, or what was that feeling like? Because you obviously proved that training for the sake of being functional. Well, so what? You could outrun and out endurance everyone, but you still obviously weren't happy with the result.
No, not at all. It was tremendously freeing. It was, I just felt like a whole weight had come off my shoulders, and I thought it was a fundamental change in my attitude to training and going to the gym and why my reasons for going. And I thought, here I've found a way where I can look good, and it seems to be something that I can do just through weight training, which I actually enjoyed. And I've never enjoyed cardio or running. I hate it, to be honest.
Even though you force yourself to do it?
Yeah. And I've done it all my life. At high school, the only sort of sports I was really seriously into was running. Through the military, it was just running all the time. Yeah, I hated every minute of it, to be honest. On reflection, I just don't enjoy enjoy running. It's just a painful, awful experience, but it's a different kind of pain to sort of the intensity and weight training, which is I find an enjoyable sort of feeling. And it was just this mind shift that occurred, and wow, I can actually do this without cardio. And that was just, it was quite tremendously liberating, as along with the idea of, I just want to train for it to look good. And hey, I'm not too proud to admit that. So many people.
I don't know why some people are hung up on that. They think it's vain or something, but I'm like, whatever. Everyone's doing it.
I think it's
just, it's why you go out and buy nicer clothes than just grabbing, sweatpants and wearing that every day. Like, presentation matters, and we can, it's safe to say that. It's like not, I think it's silly to try to pretend. I don't know. I had this discussion once with somebody. It's like is it vain or is it the wrong attitude to train for looks? I'm like, well, it's silly to try to label it because everybody wants it. So then all you're doing is labeling the human condition in general. So it's just what we are. We're visual. So it's totally okay to make it a target. I don't see why some people have a problem with it. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I think it's, I think people try to cloak it I want to be fit. I want to be healthy. They come up with these things to sort of hide the fact that they really just want to look good.
But I don't know where the root of that shame is in that, or that in, I don't know if they think it seems self-centered or, you know what I mean? I totally agree with you. I think they do want to cloak it. That's a really good word. And they're like, oh no, I just want to be have really good endurance. Or I just want to be stronger. But you know that they want to look better, and they're trying to make it seem like it's an accident that they get in shape or something.
Yeah, and it's really obvious that that people just want to look better. Everyone I see at the gym is the same thing. And it is obvious. It's more obvious with someone who's overweight, and they're going to the gym, and you see them on the cardio machines, and you know that yes, they are there because they want to look better. Obviously, there's some health things going on there too, but.
They can run 10 kilometers. They 100% they're trying to improve the look of their body.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, so we kind of covered that. Let's get to, so you start us in on when you get going. I mean, you took things, seriously, and you just hit the accelerator. So let's just go with, what training program did you start with? Let's start there, and then we'll talk about diet later.
Yep. I just did the 3.0 program. I thought about doing MBF, but I kind of look back at my training history of lifting over the years, and I have done a bit, and I had sort of had that 18 months of going to the gym, and I'd built my strength up a reasonable amount there. And I'd sort of, I think I'd heard a few people saying about MBF was more like a traditional bodybuilder type workout. Is that right?
Bodybuilder power. It's kind of more like powerlifting, but it's something. It's, if you look at it, it's something that most people will recognize, to at least some of it, most of it.
Yeah, and then that's a sort of that bodybuilding split stuff was, the bodybuilding stuff was what I'd done in the past. Those type of workouts, and I guess I wanted to just try something a bit different, and the 3.0 seemed. With the rep ranges and the periodization and the whole variety of it and the types of exercises that were in it just appealed to me a bit more, I think. So I just started straight in with 3.0.
And you just did you put any boosters on it?
Yep. I did some boosters. For a start, I did the 4 days required by 3.0 without question, without changing anything. I did like a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday with that.
Yep.
And I trained always a weekend day, either a Saturday or a Sunday. And on those days, I would often do like two boosters back to back. And I felt like my shoulders weren't very well developed because I'd in the past, just through injury, I'd broken a few things in my body with the military, and I'd always shied away from doing too many shoulder exercises. So I felt that my shoulders weren't very strong, very well developed, certainly, because I just couldn't do shoulder press very, very heavy weights at all. So I added shoulder boosters, and then I also added some arm boosters because I sort of looked at my arms and went, oh yeah, maybe the biceps or triceps need a bit of work. I didn't have very big arms. So I would do either one of the shoulder days and an arm day back to back, or two shoulder days or two arm days back to back on a weekend. Mm-hmm. And I kept that up pretty much through the whole 3 months.
And at no point did you feel like you were overdoing it?
No.
I'm not suggesting you should have. It's always interesting to get a perspective. I only ask because some people think like 6 days a week or 7 days a week of training is too much, but it's not, as long as you manage it and as long as you've conditioned for it, then no, it's, you can do it.
Yeah, well, I'd had all that conditioning prior. Plus, I have to say a bit about my training history before that. I'd sort of gotten fat over a few years, but back through the late 90s and then through the most of the 2000s, I was in a special forces unit in the army. So I was training twice a day, and I'd gotten into that, the mindset of, that I can train twice, or like up to twice a day, 6 days a week, into an insane amount of training. And I'd experienced true overtraining in the past.
And so would you agree with what I say, that most people don't even know what true overtraining even is?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, to get to one stage of overtraining, where I literally could hardly walk for a week and just had to lay in bed. I mean, I'd done 28 days straight, 24/7, of a field exercise, including sort of 72 hour food and sleep deprivation periods. Doing that to the point, and that's what it was, that it took that much to get me to a point where I would say I had overtrained and then had that sort of crash, like, right. I think your podcast peer talks about it.
Right. And you've reached your true physical limit. You're like, this human body cannot do anymore. Like, this is it.
That's it. Yeah. I sort of knew my limitations. Mm-hmm. And I feel, I know there's the sort of the saying of, and I've said it to a few people before, okay, if you can do X amount extra, maybe you're not pushing yourself hard enough in the four-day program. The intensity's not there. But I sort of took your guide, that I've heard you talk about. If you've got to do 13 reps, you do 13 reps with perfect form. The 14th rep, the form starts to go, and you can't do a 15th rep at all. And that was my intensity guide the whole way through, and I think I probably 85-90% of the time I managed to that level of intensity.
Achieve that, yeah. And that's the thing. Some people don't quite – that takes a little bit of experience. That a rep isn't just a rep. A workout's not a workout. It's what you do with it, right? So you've obviously trained yourself to know where your limits are and what true intensity is. And we kind of talk about this a lot, but it matters. Like, you and I can go in and do the exact same number of reps in the exact same amount of time, but one of the workouts can be completely lazy and nowhere close to our sort of full potential. And the other one, that you could get every single ounce of energy out of it, right? Like, all, like, really do it. And then on top of that, it's the person's ability to really put, like, you've obviously, I would say you can push to your true actual maximum intensity given your history, like your military history and how hard you have pushed your body. People who've never learned to push that hard, a lot of newbies, I'm just telling this for everybody listening. This is going to be useful.
Yep.
Some new people just, and you probably experienced this too when you first started training. You don't know your limits until you get pushed to them. And it almost always, it happened with me, like in football and with powerlifting and a few other, you almost always need a coach somewhere along the line who pushes you way further than you thought you could go. It's kind of hard to do that yourself. You almost need someone to do it to you, because if you leave it up to yourself, you'll always stop before you think, you'll always stop sooner than you think your body can do it. And then, and you know, like with that military stuff, that's insane. That 28 day whatever that, like, you probably would have never in a million years thought you could possibly actually do that to yourself. And then you did. You're like, okay, I made it. Yeah. And same with any high intensity stuff. You need that guiding hand that is like, yeah, you're going to feel crappy, but you're not going to die. And then, you know, some people are just scared to test their limits because it is uncomfortable, but your body can go way further. Like, once you hit the comfort barrier where things start getting uncomfortable, that's where all the work's happening, right? And then and then most people don't believe how much further past that they can actually go. And they're still not overtrained. So I think it's, I don't know if you've heard us say it's under conditioning, not overtraining. It's clearly anybody can get super sore and incapacitated from a workout if they're not ready for it. But the conditioning we can build up to far surpasses what most people have ever tried. Like, clearly with your experience, you can take your body much further than most people ever bother even trying.
Oh, you can. And I think most people, I would say the majority of people can take their bodies further than they themselves think they can. Often when you get pushed to your limits or pushed to the edge, I believe that you suddenly find that what you thought were your limits aren't actually your limits, and that the body is actually capable of a lot more than you think it is.
100%. Yeah.
But I didn't think that the extra sort of day was too much, and a couple of times I did train do a sort of 7 days, or I would do one of the workouts. I should say training sessions now, because the podcast you did with the difference between training versus working out was quite an eye opener for me, and made me sort of push a bit harder, I think, in the gym. But I would often do one of the 3.0 workouts, and then I would go, well, I think I'll go and do 5 sets of chin-ups and do some push-ups and maybe a few sets of barbell bench, because I don't have a chest day, or I'm not doing chest for 2 days or something like that. I would carefully look at what I might be able to add on top of the standard workout. I never changed anything within the workout. I just looked at it. I looked at just what I could do a little bit extra here and there each time, just sort of pushing a little bit harder, a little bit extra. And what I decided I would do was based upon what the next couple of 3.0 workouts were. I would look and I'd go, well, I can do some chin-ups because I don't have I'm not doing lat pull-downs for 2 days or something.
So as long as you weren't going to be overloading that muscle the very next day. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that makes sense. And that, I mean, it's in, yeah, and you've built up the conditioning and the ability to actually do that, so that's fine. And for somebody who's less experienced than you, maybe the 4 base workouts is plenty.
I honestly think I could have just done the 4 base workouts. And a couple of weeks I did. There was one stage where I'd done an extra day, and I just killed arms, absolutely killed my arms. I'd done the two arm boosters and then added in a whole massive lot of curls of different types. And I just killed my arms, and I'd stupidly not looked at, the next day's training, because this was a Sunday, and then on Monday I was starting the next week of I think it was hypertrophy, and it was bicep day.
Did you even bother, or did you just skip
the I did it. But I had about 2 or 3 days where I just had agony in my arms. It was like they're just cramping.
So you recognize you kind of overdid it there.
And then I think that week I just did the 4 base workouts, and I didn't do a 5th or a 6th day at all. I spaced them out too. I spread them through the week rather than doing a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. I just sort of took an extra couple of days in the middle there.
So you basically experimented with your limits here too.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And, right, and then go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. And then of course there was rage.
Oh yeah,
a whole another level of pain. Yeah, and I was cursing John Barbin.
Oh well, what's
as I was tifting in a good way, of course.
Yeah. Did you like the way those were structured?
I did. Yeah. I mean, I've only so far done the Fibonacci pyramids. The
right.
Two
right.
Of
yeah.
Boats.
Yeah. Most people start with those. Yeah.
And they actually, the first week of those was, I was away on holiday. And I'd sort of organized another gym to go to. And it was just really hard to, I was doing swimming and doing things with my little 2 year old son and having to carry him around and things like that. On the holiday, after I'd sort of snuck off for an hour and a half to the gym and done a rage workout. And yeah, I just, my body was pretty badly hammered that week. I got back from a rage workout. And my wife goes, oh, I want to walk around the bays to the shops. And okay, so we did that, and that was like 10 kilometers pushing a pram. And I'm, of course, at this stage, I'm still only eating sort of 1800 calories. Yeah, and just, yeah, it really took it out of me.
Did you just sleep for like 15 hours after that?
I had a big nap in the afternoon.
I'll bet you did. Yeah.
I had a good sleep that night too and slept in a bit in the morning. I was just,
man.
Needed.
All right. So then training was pretty, did you do any cardio or no?
I did do, well, I say quote unquote cardio, because to my way of thinking, cardio is, you know, working at, is a jog or a run or something where you're working a sweat up.
Okay. Well, how about this? Not that, but any other activity at all.
Yeah.
On top of the workouts, purposeful activity, not just like busy work.
So I'll sort of say quote unquote cardio as basically a nice, gentle sort of 20 to 40 minute walk on the treadmill, basically after maybe 3 out of the 4 workouts, I'd do
okay,
a walk and just a slight incline, 5Ks an hour, just enough that I could basically listen to a podcast and not work up.
Yeah, did you do that at the end of your workout?
Yeah, usually at the end. Yeah,
Do you find that somewhat relaxing, like to unwind, so to speak?
Yeah, and it made more sense to me. I listened to Brad Pilon's podcast about the inflammation theory. Mm. And he was talking about how that gentle cardio can help and the anti response after training. Mm-hmm. That's splitting hairs for me, but I just felt good doing a walk. But I thought, well, if it's doing something like that as well, well, that's a bonus too. But it was just nice to almost a cool down or just to unwind.
Yeah, that's the pattern I do. After I do weights, I kind of, even if it's a long or short, even if it's 20 minutes or an hour, the walk afterwards, actually, I really look forward to that sort of unwind. I can't just leave the gym right after a workout too wound up to, I need to come down from it somehow, and the walk is really good.
Yeah, I think I noticed sometimes I would just get so pumped, I'd just be, I'd just done the workout and then I'd cranked out some sets of chin-ups and then I just still had this sort of edgy energy that I wanted to expend and the walk was a good way of doing it. I mean, even on low calories, and sometimes I felt pretty crappy by the end of the walk, because the amount that I was eating. The other aspect of besides it, sort of an unwind, was the whole time I was looking at the calorie counter on the treadmill. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, John Barbin says this is not accurate, but I'm burning calories. And
well, it's more than nothing. It's got to be more than nothing.
Yeah, it's more than nothing, and it's just every
the only reason.
Counts.
Yeah, the only reason we say that is because we know people are going to tease, trying to like, but you know, you give them a yard, an inch, they'll take a yard. It's like, it's not, or however that, I don't even know how that saying goes. The point is, if they think, you're going to start tricking yourself into thinking that that's actually worth more calories than it really is.
Yeah, I mean, I know, because there's people, I'm sure, who walk on the treadmill, go, the treadmill says 270 calories, therefore, I can go and eat 270 calories. Now, then you add the treadmill error in with the food estimation error, and suddenly they've gone and they've eaten, you know, 100 calories.
Well, the treadmill error plus the fact that it's it's not net calories, it's total calories. So you have to subtract the amount of calories you would have burned anyways, right? And no one ever thinks of that. So it's, you know, if you walk for an hour on the treadmill at a steady pace, but a pretty relaxing pace, it's still probably only 300 total calories net.
Oh, exactly.
So that exchange for an hour of work, is that worth it? For some people, it is. But you need to be spot on with your diet for that to even matter. Otherwise, it's just a step forward and a step back.
And that's also assuming that you're using those calories to quote unquote buy yourself extra food.
Just make an even bigger deficit. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't count exercise at all in any of my estimations. I was just working straight off RMR and trying to get a decent deficit off my RMR.
So even though you did, okay, so let's get into that. Let's get into the diet side and the calories and whatnot.
I basically followed the AGD diet. I guess that's how I sort of got into the Adonis thing, because I bought the AGD diet book first.
Interesting.
I'd been doing, I mean, I hit the ground running with doing 3.0 and with when I started Adonis, because I'd come off 6 weeks of doing 6 days a week of circuit training at the gym. And in my before photo, I'd already lost 3 or 4 inches off my waist and about 15 pounds from the month or the 6 weeks previous to that. But I'd sort of hit a point with my diet where I was cooking up Tupperware containers of chicken breast and rice and filling the freezer and the fridge, and I was just eating this really monotonous diet, and I'd given up everything that I like to eat.
Yeah, you were living the bodybuilder lifestyle.
Yeah, just thinking, oh, no, is this going to be the rest of my life?
You know what's funny? Hold that thought. I was just at a fitness show because a friend of mine was competing. A girl I know was in one of the figure categories, and everybody there's doing that still. Like, this is 2 days ago, or whatever, just a couple of days ago, and everybody there is still doing the Tupperware container full. It's never going to change in that culture.
No, and suddenly it was like, here's someone telling me, you can just eat whatever the hell you want, and just keep your calories under control. And that was the first time I'd sort of heard of the, all that calories that even computed to me when I first read the AGD stuff. I'd seen the numbers on the back of packets for years and it just never occurred to me because I'd never probably had to needed to think about it before.
Did it seem wrong to you, or just seem sort of like stupid obvious and you're like, oh, well, duh.
Yeah, I was like Homer Simpson, duh. I just felt really stupid.
That was purely not my intention at all.
No. you just kick yourself, don't you? It's such a simple concept. And once you sort of get it, it's brilliant. I started with the AGD stuff. And then you guys brought out the preview of the transformation contest diet, and I jumped on that as well, with the calculator and so on. I knew I had to eat less, but I was still a bit unsure about how much, how much I needed to eat, not like what calorie levels, cause I was hearing all sorts of different numbers thrown around. And I thought, the reverse taper type diet would give me an idea because it's got a calculator and it's going to give me a bit of structure and tell me, how many calories I should be eating. So I got that as well. And then I started off, with the AGD, I was eating pretty much everything I was eating before I started this sort of Tupperware phase of boiling rice and that sort of thing. I just went back to my original diet, and I was eating, quote unquote healthy. I wasn't eating a lot of junk food or processed foods, that sort of thing. So I just went back to the foods that I enjoyed eating and just really cut the calories. I used the reverse taper as a bit of a guide. I remember you saying, that you need to factor in about a 10 to 15% margin of error for food labeling and estimation and that type of thing.
Yeah, the HD calorie counting error always applies to everything you ever see as far as calories, including the calculator. Now, some people even asked us, why didn't you include it in the calculator itself?
Right.
And then I responded, I'm like, okay, well, then we either incorporate the error in for you and then have to point out that the error is there, or we don't, and then either way you have to apply it. Like, either way you have to apply it. We either go ahead and apply it for you, or you apply it yourself. Either way, the calculator number comes out wrong, or you adjust from what technically is the correct number, but you know what I mean? Like, one of the two ways, you still have to, the error is built in one way or another. So I would rather everyone work off of always applying the 10 to 15% rule to every number they see instead of guessing when the rule's been applied for them. I just felt like I had to point that out because you did it right. You applied it to the calculator and it worked, right? And then you made some of your own adjustments. So I want you to talk about that, like what we talked about earlier.
Yeah. I'd listened to all the podcasts and read some of the blogs, about what previous contest winners had done. And I was seeing some incredibly low numbers, guys talking about, I had 1,000 calories or less for the last, for weeks and, just these or extremely long fasts. And I was thinking, well, hang on, this is what these guys have done to get into that shape. But the reverse taper seems to be sort of, it's a less crash approach, more sustainable, but it's a higher amount. What do I do? So what I did was I took 15% off for error off the reverse taper, what the calculator was telling me. And then I took about another 15% off again, off that number and made that my, calorie average target for the week. And then as I got leaner and every week I did my measurements and I updated the calculator calorie amount. And then I, if that said to go up by 100 calories because my waist was slimmer and I'd lost some weight, that's what I adjusted that low figure to. I came up another 100.
So you basically, as if the calculator, you applied the AGD rule of 15% plus your own rule of 15%.
Yeah.
And then as it increased your calories, you increased off of that. And did you feel underfed, like deprived? Was it doable? Like, what do you think?
Oh, it was totally doable.
Doable. Yeah. You did it. So,
yeah.
But in general, I mean,
it wasn't comfortable sometimes initially, especially with, the workouts. I guess it was more the first sort of 3 weeks, maybe, 2 or 3 weeks that I really did feel like crap, to be honest.
It's low.
Yeah.
It's low.
Yeah. I'd been used to sort of training and then eating a lot. And I did sort of lack energy, but I think my body seemed to either become more efficient or was become more used to the low calorie amount. And then my energy levels sort of, basically just for the rest of the 3 months just slowly picked up and obviously I'm sort of my calories were slowly creeping up as well. Initially it was a bit of a shock.
And that's going to happen, right? And especially the way it's the reverse taper set up, the beginning's going to be the part that feels the worst, which is funny because I was going back to the story about the fitness show. Everybody who at the show I know was doing a forward taper where it just got more intense and less calories towards the show. And one of the competitors said something funny. She went to go see her coach, her quote coach, who was like dieting her down and basically standard taper, but just less and less food as they got more and more lean. And then he was assessing her physique before she went on stage or a few days before. And she's like, man, I feel terrible. He's like, yeah, but you look great. And then he's like, with this sort of stuff, the worse you feel, the better you look. And I'm like, that is stupid. Like what you explained is the way it should be. At the very beginning, when you have the most fat to lose and you cut the most calories, yes, that's going to be the rough phase. But then it should just from then on, it should just feel better, like better and better and better.
That's it. I just kept telling myself, the only way is up from here. I'm only going to feel better. It's sort of a, get the worst bit over and done with at the start. And
totally. Then, yeah. Like, yeah, rip the Band-Aid off, sort of.
That's it. It's always pull the Band-Aid off fast. I'm a real wuss when it comes to that, you know, sort of, my hairs are all coming out and, but yeah, I'm definitely a supporter of that, of the Band-Aid pulling off.
So you taper up and by the end of it, your energy levels are fine.
Oh yeah. Yeah. By now, my energy levels are great. I've got no problem at all. Or even the last few weeks, my energy levels come up significantly. I think there must be, well, certainly for me, I found there must have been a particular calorie amount that once I'd sort of reached it, I mean, I was still in deficit, but to RMR, but once I'd sort of hit a certain point, I started feeling pretty good actually, every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that was sort of around probably 1,800-1,900 calories. Once I sort of started crossing over that, I didn't have a problem anymore. I found I could handle that. Well, I found I could handle probably 1,600 to 1,700, no problems without really feeling too hungry. And then once it sort of crept up from there up towards 2,000, I was, yeah, no dramas at all.
Oh, yeah, well, of course. All right, so that's pretty standard. And then you just stuck to that, and the results kind of speak for themselves. So what, I guess, run us through, I guess we're getting on to the end here. It's been pushing an hour. Do you have, I don't know, would you have some parting thoughts, like advice you want to give? Do you want to talk about your pictures at all, or
yeah,
you pick. We get to kind of wrap it up, so whatever you're closing thoughts you want it to be.
Yeah, I did do some supplementation with my diet, but it was basically they're just taking creatine, mm-hmm. the monohydrate, and I used a protein powder, mm-hmm. Mainly just to get my protein up to that level in how much protein of in Brad's book.
Yeah, did you find that you kind of needed powder to get it there?
I did, yeah. Well, to be able to keep the calories low.
Oh, right, yeah.
An efficient way of was getting a really low-calorie protein powder that was basically no carb.
No fat, yeah.
Yeah, and just about pure protein, and that was a good way of getting the protein up without increasing calories. And the creatine, I'd done that years ago. I tried that for short term, but when I started taking it, I don't know if I'm a hyper responder or what to creatine, but I seem to get something out of it, pretty good out of it. I think I remember you talking something about creatine levels in red meat or something, and is that right? Is it naturally found in red meats? Because I don't eat much red meat at all, and never have
it. It is. I mean, in the human diet, if you're going to get much of it at all, that's probably where you're going to get it. So if you're not a red meat eater,
no, never been. Yeah.
Yeah, me neither. I don't really eat much of it at all. So if you don't eat it a lot, you know, I mean, it's in the diet, like it's in various sources. Red meat's the highest, but we just don't take in a lot of it. It's kind of like fish oil. It's kind of like omega-3 oils. They are in certain foods, but they're in foods that at least in the North American population doesn't eat much of. So, and maybe even where you guys are, it's just a lot of people just don't get it. So that's why the supplement, Now there's pockets of people around the world who eat lots of red meat or who eat lots of, fish, so they get the fish oils, and it doesn't make any sense for them to supplement with it. But then there's huge chunks of populations where it's literally doesn't exist in the diet, and so that's why the supplement works. Because people are just so deficient in it.
Well, I also, speaking of fish oil, I did, and I had previously been taking fish oil, I mean, things I'd heard from you guys really reinforced that, so I just kept up with taking the fish oil, and I was taking a multivitamin every day as well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes after a workout, I just made up a little drink of, just glucose. I counted the calories for it. It was about 150 calories, like 40 grams of glucose. But sometimes I would just drink that after a workout just to bring my energy levels up again, because I would just feel so depleted. Sometimes I would go...
Kind of like your own little Gatorade recovery drink.
Exactly, yeah. And I'd have trouble just walking out of the gym or putting the key in the car. My hand would shake or...
Oh, right, because you basically really were just drained, yeah. Every day, yeah. I've had a couple workouts like that where on the treadmill I'm recognizing, I'm like, oh, it's over. I'm at the limit. I'm like, I got to stop right now.
Yeah, yeah. And that had happened really happened to me quite a lot, actually. Probably at least once a week I'd have a training session like that. Not so much now that my calories are up, but when I was low cal, it really affected me.
Yeah, and I guess the one thing before we continue to remind people is some of this sounds a little extreme, but it's, again, it's like you said, maybe the first 3 weeks was like that, then it already started improving. So there's going to be a few phases where things get tough, but they don't last. You come out of it, especially with if you follow reverse taper, they don't last very long at all. And the best part is it gets better, not worse.
I just
want to remind people of that.
And I think if you're aware of it and you're sort of a bit educated, and I certainly the whole time I was listening right through my transformation. I was listening to the podcast all the time, and I did the Adonis University stuff. I listened to
all that. Oh, okay, yeah.
And I think once you're a bit educated about it, and you expect it. It's just not a bother. Like, for instance, I suddenly felt really weak in the gym, but everyone was saying, well, no, when you're on low calories, amount of weight you lift is going to drop, just through your lack of energy, basically. You just, and I did notice I was about a 20% decrease in the weight I was lifting, prior to the diet. But my strength massively increased over the 3 months. Probably by 30 or 40% in all my lifts, relative to being in a deficit.
Right, right.
And now that my sort of calories are creeping up quite a lot, it almost feels like the weights are just exploding. I keep going up, and I think, well, last time it was 40 kilo dumbbells, and suddenly it's, you know, I'm doing something with 50 kilo dumbbells I'd gone to grab the 42s and suddenly going, these are really light, and just had to keep going up because I'm just eating, you know, sort of at maintenance at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And that's another side effect of the reverse taper that I didn't even think of, is that it feels better as you, like, the whole point of it's to avoid the crash, but one of the other side effect benefits is that at the end, you feel strong. Like, everything feels good. The point is to finish the diet feeling good, not feeling miserable.
Yeah, yeah. With my photos, so I think you want to talk about that. With my photos, I took them myself for a start. I used to be a photographer before I was in the army for about 7 years, shooting for magazines.
Okay, so you know what you're doing.
Yeah. So I had an idea, even though I'd sort of gotten rid of most of my equipment, and hadn't sort of done a studio type shoot for a long time. Mm-hmm. I just had got some cheap lights off eBay and sort of set them up and, hung a backdrop up and went from there. I got some really good advice, on the preparation, not just from the coaching call, that you put out about doing a deplete and that sort of thing. I talked to one of the, I emailed one of the guys on the forums whose photos looked really, really good, Ross Kosak. Mm-hmm. And he had given me a few ideas and told me, you know, sort of what he had done, which not a lot of sort of prep at all, really. And that relaxed me greatly ahead of the photos, because I was thinking, oh, no, what am I going to do, you know, for preparation. So I ended up just sort of doing the pretty standard 24-hour fast, 24-hour water deplete. I'm not really that hairy, so I didn't really need to shave.
that's a great statement. I'm not really that hairy.
Yeah, well, people have called me sort of a skinned rat before. You know, like, there's not much there. It was a bit of peach fluff off the forearms, I think, was all that came off. Mm-hmm. And I'd gotten a tan, I'd just done sort of some sunbeds, solarium stuff.
The water, did you increase your water and then drop it, or did you just drink as you normally drank and then just drop some water and that's it?
I drank as I normally drank. The day before in the morning, I'd done a workout, and I drink a lot during the workout, at least 4 or 5 liters.
Okay.
I just keep drinking the whole time. I keep refilling the bottle up. So I guess I drank a lot then. And then I stopped at lunchtime, on that day, and then just didn't drink again basically after the photos the next day. And the same with the eating. I'd had breakfast on the morning of the day before, and then I just didn't eat again till the day of the shoot. Mm-hmm. And then, someone had said something about, bodybuilders eating bags of jelly babies and stuff before they go on stage, or like simple sugars or carbs, and that type of thing. So I wanted to do some photos before eating anything. So I did those, and then I had a meal of just some cereal and I had some Easter eggs that I hadn't eaten from Easter, and a bag of jelly babies, ironically. And I had that stuff, and then I kept shooting pictures, and I ended up shooting for about 6 hours, 6 or 7 hours, and that was after about 2 hours of setting up and all the preparation and the oiling and things like that.
Yeah, it takes some time, yeah.
Yeah,
Did you notice the eating made a difference or no?
It seemed to, yeah. I mean, firstly the deplete seemed to just work wonders for me. It was like...
Oh, yeah, tighten up the look, yeah.
Yeah, it was like suddenly I'm shrink-wrapped instead of, being a little bit puffy around the bottom there. And then the carbs, it seemed to be about 3 or 4 hours after I'd just smashed this bag of jelly babies and all these carbs, that my abs just seemed to pop a bit more, and everything just seemed to pop a bit. And that's pretty much the window that all the good photos came out of. Mm-hmm. I just seemed to look the best there. But yeah,
were you surprised that it made that much of a difference, just eating them, a couple of things?
Yeah, I was. I didn't realize how much your look can change just from the types of food that you eat. When you get lean, obviously.
Yeah, when you're that lean, it matters. Like it really matters.
Yeah, I didn't feel that I was like super lean, and certainly.
But when you're lean enough, it all of a sudden starts to matter.
Yeah. And the photos, the best photos sort of came out of that time.
Well, okay. Geez, we gotta wrap this thing up here.
Yep.
You did do a DEXA too, though.
I did. Yes. Yeah. I did and that.
Can you share some of your numbers, quickly? Like what, where you landed at the end?
Yeah, right. Well, this was, the DEXA was 1 week before the photos, to the day. Mm-hmm. My total body fat percentage came in at 11.4. Mm-hmm. Now that's, funnily enough, if you discount my head, which was 19.6%, I don't know where all that is, probably around my brain. My body fat percentage for just everything below the neck was 10.9. And I was carrying a little bit more in my legs, 11.8 and 12.6 in my left and right leg. So my trunk was 10.2%.
You're a lot like me. Yeah.
Yeah. My arms were sort of 9.7 and 10%. So most of the visible stuff in the photos is pretty much around the 10% mark.
Yeah, you're almost exactly like me in the first round of photos we put up.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a great experience to get the DEXA done, and mm-hmm. and I'd like to enter 88 and look at getting another one done in a couple of months, and possibly then at the end of the 3 months of 88. Mm-hmm. The other thing that was surprising too that came out of the DEXA was my resting metabolic rate. They use a thing called a Cunningham equation, which apparently can only accurately be used with a DEXA, to calculate basically an accurate measure of my RMR, and it was 2165 calories, and all the previous calculators I'd used online and things, Harris Benedict and that type of thing, had put me at anywhere from sort of 1800 to 1950 as an RMR estimate. Mm-hmm. And I think that might also help explain how I got such good results too.
Even that one's got its own error, but yeah, it sounds like if multiple things are placing you close to 2000, then that's probably where you are.
Yeah. So I think that's why when I was eating low, it's made a little bit more of a difference. I've also been, I went and got, and I've been wearing a body bug.
Interesting. Yeah.
Monitor, yeah. And that's been putting, I've been measuring my burn for the last couple of weeks, and I've found I've been burning up to around 3600 to 3800 calories on workout days. And probably around 2300 to 2600 calories burning on non-workout days, and that's
as per the body bug, yeah.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be sort of greater than 90% accurate. So there's about 10% error in that. So I was burning a lot more calories too in a training day than I thought as well. So if I work it out, most days I was probably a 1,000 calorie deficit. 800 to 1,000, and some days, up to 1,500, 2,000 on the odd day.
Yeah, given all, and the thing is, that sort of thing can happen if you've got all of your calorie counting errors built in, and like you did everything right on target, and you concluded your errors, you did everything like spot on, and then sort of after the fact you discovered that, oh hey, my metabolic rate might be even a little bit higher than I was guessing. So that's like a bonus.
Yeah, bonuses.
And that's nice at the end to discover that. The worst thing you can do is assume you're higher than average and find out you're not. And I'm not saying you did that, but what I'm saying is, you lucked out and found out you were higher than average, or at least a lot of these different equations are suggesting you're probably higher than average. Then your results probably say it too. But, that's sort of after the fact of being diligent on top of everything else, right? It's kind of, you'd never want to trick yourself into thinking you're the snowflake and you're higher than average, because most people just aren't.
No. I mean, and I would, I'd say that's a pretty important point is accounting for all those errors and really just going lower, with your calories and like you say, treating everything as a bonus.
I mean, that's what you did. And then maybe at the end you also discovered that maybe your, multiple measurements indicate you likely were a little bit higher than average on BMR, which is great. That means you got better results. So, I guess this is a cautionary tale for people listening. It worked out even better for Pete because he actually turned out a little bit above average, maybe on RMR, but at the same time, you were really diligent with doing everything. So it's not it's not that you just lucked out. I mean, it was all the work that did it, right?
Yeah, I had a digital scale. I weighed just about everything that I ate. I had the same Subway roll for lunch every day after training. But I bought one and I bought it home and I took it apart and I weighed all the ingredients.
Oh, interesting.
And worked out the calories properly and then preset that, and I recorded everything on my iPhone, on an app, a calorie counting app, and entered everything as I ate it. So I don't think in 3 months anything actually, got eaten that, wasn't recorded.
Well, that's good. And then from now on, now you know. Like, again, that sounds a little bit obsessive compulsive, but it's just a short period of time. It's not going to do it for the rest of your life, because once you kind of know, you know, and that's now you know. You don't actually have to.
Yeah. And I've got a good idea now. I never used to have any idea, for instance, how many calories were in an apple, and now I can just sort of pick one up and go.
Yeah. Do you just eyeball it now?
That's 100 or that's 150. I mean, some things I still weigh if I don't really know what they are, if I've not eaten them before.
Do you just have it categorized in your mind, like for the things you're aware of now?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the point. Like, there's a bit of initial work to do, and then once you've got it, like, sort of figured out, like that same Subway sub, you don't need to take it apart anymore. You're like, oh, I know what's going on in this one.
Oh, exactly.
I always get.
Yeah. Yeah. And now I don't even, I used to go to, I'd go to the Subway and they would just look at me and they would go, you know, chicken strips wrap. And I'd go, yep. Like I didn't even have to say what I wanted anymore. And then the other day I went in and I ordered I'll have a foot long, you know, this or that and the other thing. And they were like shocked at what's going on. And I was like, well.
Oh, because you switched up the order. Yeah.
Yeah. They freaked out a bit.
You should show them the pictures and they'd be like, oh, okay, cool.
I did actually today.
Oh, did you? Great.
Yeah. I said, oh, you know, those subs I've been eating. I said, oh, look, yeah, there you go. Here's my pictures. I showed them
what'd they think?
And they were like, oh, wow. Yeah. And
Can they have them for marketing? You put them up on the wall?
Yeah. No, I just said, oh, look, that's what no cheese on your sub does for you. As a tongue in cheek.
Okay. Well, let's finish off here. What's your advice then for someone who, like yourself from before, you know, from the previous Pete to the current Pete, what's your advice for other guys who want to get in shape?
Well, firstly, I would say, even though the contests are a great idea, don't wait for one to start. If I had done that, I would have waited for 3 months. Yeah. Three months. You know, I would have waited for 3 months for ATA to start. Don't wait for one to start. Just do it. Start training right away because, I mean, if you're a person who waits for a contest to start, then maybe you're also a person who, you know, waits maybe for summer or waits till you get your new gym shoes or the moon's full or something like that to, you know, and just never gets it done. So
it's always a reason to put it off.
Yeah. So I think if you just sort of take action now and just get into it and start training, you'll get the results you want. I mean, why wait 3 months for the sake of a contest? As great as the idea is, and I did find it quite motivating, and it gave me a good focus to be shadowing the contest and just pretending I was in it. And it also helped, and I told a little white lie to people. I would sort of say I'm in a fitness contest, even though I wasn't. I took it seriously enough that I felt like I was in the contest. Mm-hmm. And it was just a good way of stopping people from hassling me. Are you looking thin or you're looking a bit, you know, what's going on?
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
And why can't you eat this or that? And I would just say, oh, I'm in a fitness contest. And they would shut up instantly. They understood that. Mm-hmm. But if I just said, oh, I'm trying to watch my weight, or lose weight, people
then all of a sudden you have like emotional and psychological problems to them.
Yeah. I've got an eating disorder all of a sudden, as opposed to, oh no, he's in a competition. Another point I would say is a bit of a take home message is, do the program as it's laid out with the intensity that you're supposed to do it and don't try and second guess, anything. In fact, I would say to people, just blank out all other fitness and diet reading and advice you might get for the 3 months and just stick to the program as laid out. And then if you still feel like you want to add things on, you know, sure. I mean, I did that. You go ahead and add stuff onto it, but do the base program as it's laid out with intensity first. And then if you've still got some energy, and you still want to push things a bit further and you think you can, then do it. I would also say listen to the podcasts. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you are, so good on you. I listened to, I think, every podcast you guys had ever done throughout the 3 months, and I found them motivating, inspirational, informative. I could just keep talking about that. I'd also say don't talk about fitness or what you're doing. Because it's just not worth the energy. I mean, I'd say make the change first and then go, you know, ta-da, look at me. Look at the new me. Because if you try and explain things, it's just taking away from the energy that you could be putting into working out and into the other areas of your life, because you just find so many people that just don't get it. They don't understand.
Mm-hmm. There's an operating rule for your life in general. Mm. And you should never have to explain yourself. In general, that's kind of one of my operating mission statements. It's not, if you find yourself in a situation when you have to explain yourself, that's not a situation you want to be in or not a person you want to be talking to. So just, if you can, like, that's just an overriding fundamental thing of life. You should never have to explain yourself.
And it can be difficult not to talk about fitness because you, I mean, here you are, you're losing all this weight and you're feeling great and your muscles are getting bigger and your confidence is increasing and your AI, as you know, proportionals is your AI is going up.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to actually explain all that to somebody, you're not talking to the wrong person.
Yeah, and you're naturally feeling good about yourself and you want to sort of share what you're doing, but I think you just really got to resist the impulse because unless you really are sure of the person.
It's got to be a willing student, otherwise they're stealing from your most precious resource, which is your personal energy.
Yeah.
And you can't give that to people who don't deserve it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'd also say use the forums. Start a blog. I mean, the support and knowledge in the forums is pretty amazing. To be honest, I don't think I would have gotten through the 3 months. There was a couple of periods there where I'd cop some flack from people, and I think being able to sort of unload a little bit on the forums and hear that other guys had gone through the same experiences really helped a lot. And also, I think towards the end, it starts getting a bit critical. And I'd say to people, don't try and push things towards the end. I mean, once you're in a groove and it's working with your diet and your training, you do get to a point near the end where sometimes there's not always a lot of change on the scale, but the mirror will start to change. So I think, if the numbers are saying in the measurements and the numbers are saying, that you're eating under RMR, if you think your diet isn't working towards the end, don't just suddenly go, oh, I've got to go harder or I've got to cut more calories or whatever. I mean, things will be happening there. You know, fat will be disappearing from somewhere. So I think you've just got to trust the numbers and trust your measurements and the look in the mirror. And I stopped worrying about the scale altogether in the last few weeks. I just didn't. I mean, I weighed myself just because I'd already been doing it, but I just tried to block the scale weight out of my mind, and just go on what my waist was doing and what the mirror was telling me. And that goes along with probably my last piece of advice I'd say is, with your measuring and, you know, measure and record everything, whether it's in a notebook or on a spreadsheet. I use a spreadsheet, and then I have my phone for recording, my calories and so on. And all my weights, I started a spreadsheet up for all the different exercises with the weights and the rep ranges and what the last weight I'd lifted was. So I would say just record everything, and measure everything too. I mean, besides the AI measurements of shoulders and waist, I mean, you can just do those, but I mean, it can be useful later on, I think, to still do like arms and chest and forearm and thigh and calf and those type of measurement, body measurements as well, just as a useful indicator for later on for when you win. I mean, because obviously this is a lifestyle now and I'm going to keep weight training, and having those numbers could be useful in the future. Mm-hmm. And then I'd say just to finish off, probably the most important thing I discovered was consistency is what really matters. Consistency in your training, consistency in your eating, and consistency in even things like measurements and leading up to measurements. I weighed and measured myself the same time before breakfast on the same day of the week with the same eating patterns prior, the same amount fasted, etc. And with the lifting, I was very consistent. I think up until I got the flu the last couple of weeks, up until then, I just not missed a workout. I'd gotten every workout in, and was consistently lifting with the intensity. And then with my diet, I was just really consistent with, I don't think I had a single week where my weekly average was over my RMR, for the whole 12 weeks. I had binges, but within a couple of days I'd hauled them back and pulled my weekly average back.
And that's huge. That consistency is everything. I mean, everything we've talked about is irrelevant if you're not consistent.
Yeah. I mean, the way I looked at it as a, analogy was, you know, I was digging my way out of a fat prison, and instead of a rusty spoon, now I had a shovel, with this system, and it was just like one shovel full at a time. And, you know, just consistently the same amount on the shovel and just keep shoveling. And things happen, you know, things are happening. And sometimes a couple of times I sort of thought, oh, things aren't happening. But then I would just look at, because I took pictures sort of every month, and I'd look back at my last month's pictures and go, no, things are happening, things are changing. Because it's so gradual, you just don't realize it sometimes.
Yeah, and that's the trick. Some of the people that I coach, that's all we focus on in the last 4 weeks is patience.
Yeah.
Patience and consistency. Like, I'll get emails and people will be like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. Just go. And then a few days later, be like, are you sure? Like, you know, I'm like, yes, just keep going. And then at the end, they're like, wow, I didn't think it was changing that much. I'm like, yeah, you just can't see it in the mirror. It's just, Jason Gottlieb said it best. You can't see it in the mirror. You have to take a picture. You have to take that other step, remove yourself from yourself. I don't know, maybe there's actually a psychological thing going on where you, even if you do look better in the mirror, you physically actually can't see it. And then you take a picture and you're like, I
couldn't see it. I don't think I can still see it now. I look at my pictures and I go, wow, you know, that's another human being. And I look in the mirror and I sort of see some of that, but it's not.
It's almost like they're in real time in the mirror. There's some other filter or process going on where you can't actually see yourself as maybe you really are, so to speak. And then you see a picture and that filter's gone and you're like, oh, that's actually what I look like.
Yeah, there's another level of
something. There's something going on. When you see yourself live, there's something going on, and it's not exactly, I don't know, there's something different when you see it in a picture. I'm sure somewhere along the line we'll figure it out, but we know what's happening, and we know that a picture matters to kind of track yourself, so I guess that's the message.
Yeah.
Take that picture, because the mirror, you can trick yourself.
Yeah, and then that was an important thing too, I think, that I did take. That even though I didn't enter the competition around that time, I'd taken a picture, and it wasn't an imposing or anything. It was just a frontal picture, and it was sort of a point of, well, I'll just record what I look like now, because I'd done all the 6 weeks of training before, and I just wanted a sort of a baseline for when I started so I could compare it with the end. But then I was noticing the changes, and I was going, wow. And so I took the monthly pictures, and then I put them on the blogs. In fact, I was too embarrassed to even put a profile picture up on the blogs for quite a while. I just had a shot of my face, as my profile picture. And it wasn't probably for 3 or 4 weeks, after I started that I then went and I put my before picture up. Once I'd had my first sort of monthly picture taken, and then I put the two together, and then I put those up. And then I probably didn't put a proper profile picture up of what I actually look like as my body, on my blog until about month two. And then I started, by then I sort of felt comfortable enough. Like I felt like I looked good enough then to sort of, It's kind of strange because there were a lot of guys putting pictures up, and I was probably a bit more in shape or a bit leaner, but for some reason I just felt a bit embarrassed about putting up a picture, unless I got to a point where I sort of thought, yeah, that's all right, you know, I'm not the fat guy anymore. And then I started sort of keeping those pictures up. But yeah, I think taking the monthly pictures was a big thing. And then I did do a blog post where I put sort of the first 2 months together plus a before picture and put them all together with the measurements as one strip. And that, when I was doing that, that really brought it home to me how much I had actually changed. And that was quite a boost, to my confidence and to, you know, sort of propel me on for the last month.
Yeah. Part of the process is managing the fact that the change is like, I think at the end it's exponential. Even though it doesn't show up on the scale, the look becomes exponentially better and different, but the amount of patience it requires kind of the degree of patience you need to have also goes up, so you have to like trust that the little changes are actually as big as they are. It's kind of weird, so you just have to trust that it's happening, and you have to play all these little psychological games to get you through to the end. Because the scale's not changing any, it's not huge, you're not dropping pounds and pounds, and it's not like your clothes are fitting massively different anymore. It's perceptually from day to day, it feels like almost nothing's going on, but visually in the photos, lots is going on, but it's just a trick. It's like it's going reverse. It looks better and better, but it feels like less and less is happening.
Oh, and that's so true. I mean, I remember you guys saying it all comes together in the last couple of weeks, the last few weeks. And that's what I really felt even the last week, the difference between, even 1 week, I'd taken a picture sort of a week out from my final photos even, and the difference is noticeable. I mean, obviously the picture I took a week out, I wasn't fasted or depleted or pumps or anything like that, which makes, you know, and it was, the lighting wasn't that great, but, when I look closely at it, yeah, there's still even a difference just in that last week. Really, I mean, I have to say to people, it really does come together. And I even looking at my measurements, I noticed there was 1 week where my weight didn't shift at all, but I'd lost, like half an inch off my waist. Mm-hmm. And put a little bit on my shoulders. It had increased a fraction. And, once again, you just gotta trust the numbers. Yeah.
There's a disconnect in there and you have to trust the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Jason Haynes, I think, said that, and he did a really interesting blog post where it was, it's a metrics game, it's a numbers game. If you're below RMR with your diet, you're losing fat. That's full stop, no matter what's happening on the scale or happening anywhere.
Oh, yeah, it's happening no matter what, yeah.
Yeah, and he says just trust the numbers, and in the end, you get to a point where ignore the scale. You're going to be lighter than you think you're going to be. Than you might have ever, quote unquote, wanted to be or thought was the right weight to be. And I mean, weight doesn't matter. It's like when you're walking down the street or walking down the beach with your shirt off, people aren't looking at you going, trying to slide a scale under you while you're walking down the beach. It's all just about what you look like. And the mirror's going to tell you that, and your measurements are going to tell you that. And I think they're the things to start trusting. I mean, the scale's a useful tool for initially when you're losing weight, just to sort of as a guide that, okay, I'm losing weight. And initially you do lose a lot. I think I went from sort of over an inch a week off my waist, then it went sort of half inch a week, and then it went to like a quarter inch a week, and then it sort of only moved fractionally in the last few weeks. But my look was changing. Like I just noticing more definition, and there's obviously still this fat coming off.
Yeah, we tell people the goal is to get to the point where neither the weight neither the scale nor the inches change, but the look changes. That's how you know you're there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what the end is. But we've been on for a while here, so we should probably
call it
quits here. So, Pete, thanks for being on. That was great.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Yeah, anyone who's listening on iTunes, like I said, bounce over and check it out on the blog. Check out his picks. Congrats on your change, and you're going to be on the cover for sure. So for Peter Dixon, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Donis Index podcast.